Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, September 16, 2021. The World Food Program says internal displaced persons in South Sudan should expect reduction in food ration next month.
It's not a good idea. It will affect most of the family. Many people will die when they heard, even they are not happy at all because they don't have enough food in their houses. Even the food that they receive regularly is not enough for them.
And some government workers in South Sudan say working without salaries is affecting their lives.
This salary delay affects us, especially like for the transport. It gets hard because you at times have to beg drivers on the road to give you a lift.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some South Sudanese government workers say they have not received their salaries for the months of June, July and August. During his address on the 10th anniversary of the country's independence in July, President Salva Kiir said salaries would be paid on time. Government workers say the Ministry of Finance should fast track their salary payments. During the opening of the parliament last month, President Salva Kiir told lawmakers civil servants will receive their salaries on time. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Nancy Henry works for the South Sudan Customs Authority. Henry says she has not been paid for 3 straight months, which makes it difficult to feed her family.
This salary delay affects us, especially like for the transport. It gets hard because you at times have to beg drivers on the road to give you a lift so that you go to work. Even at times you get challenges at home because at times you leave home and there is nothing to feed on. You go to work hoping your salary will come, but you get nothing.
Henry says despite challenges caused by not getting paid, she continues to go to work every day because she believes the situation will change. Aquero Stella, a civil servant who prefers that her workplace not to be mentioned for fear of reprisals, says she earns 2,100 South Sudanese pounds, or an equivalent of $5 per month. Stella says she had the president's promise to pay salaries on time, but she says that promise has not been fulfilled.
We are really not happy also because we have not received and he promised. So we don't know what is taking place. Up to now, we are still waiting. Though things are hard, we are just there waiting. But I can say they should really work hard and pay us in time, yes, because we really have families. You really have kids who want to go to school, and you find that if they don't pay us in time, things are not easy, things become difficult. So they should work out something so that they can pay us.
Some civil servants are calling on the government to speed up the process of salary payments. Levi Simba Lasu, headmaster of the Sadaka Secondary School, says he last received his salary 2 months ago. He says the salary delays have affected the performance of students at his school. Lasu says teachers are looking for greener pastures where they will get paid on time.
The delay in the salary and even the salary which we are getting really affecting us teachers very, very much. To the extent even a very good number of teachers quit their job. Now they are just doing a casual work in the areas. Others are riding borders. Others are just doing their mere businesses in areas in order to feed their family. Because the salary which we are getting compared to the present day market cannot compensate.
Lasso says the government should not only pay workers on time, but increase the salaries of civil servants because of the skyrocketing prices of goods in the market. He says the poor performance of the Minister of Finance is disappointing President Kiir.
I just want to tell the minister that let him try to respect the orders of the president and let him act accordingly to the orders of the president, not to delay. Because the more he delays, the more people are not going to respect the president, and even the more people are not going to respect the government officials, because they are saying that they are just talking on radio and deceiving people.
They are not implementing what they are saying, which is not good.
South Sudan in Focus contacted Athien Din Athien, Deputy Minister of Finance, for comment, but he did not answer repeated calls or reply to text message requests for comment. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sereno in Juba.
Still in Juba, some internal displaced persons in South Sudan's capital have mixed reactions to a decision by the World Food Programme to reduce the amount of food given to more than 100,000 internal displaced persons across the country in October. While some IDPs say the decision may force them to go hungry, others say the move sends a strong message to internal displaced persons not to depend on food donations. World Food Programme says it was forced to cut food ration to some IDPs in South Sudan due to lack of funding. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wood reports from Juba.
Gatkwoth Matai has 11 family members who depend on WFP food rations since Matai left his home in the residential area of a new site following the outbreak of the conflict in December 2013 between the South Sudan Army and forces loyal to First Vice President Riek Machar. Matai says slashing food rations is like a death sentence to thousands of IDPs who have no other sources of food.
It's not a good idea. It will affect most of the family. Many people will die. When they heard, even they are not happy at all because they don't have enough food in their houses. Even the food that they receive regularly is not enough for them. So what if there will be no food for 3 months? And the stress will increase.
Matai's family is still living at the UN-run Protection of Civilians site in Juba despite the signing of the 2018 peace agreement by South Sudan's former warring groups. He says it is not safe to live outside the camp in Juba or to his hometown in Unity State.
We don't have a land for cultivation. We are not moving very far to at least do business in the town. Only we are confined in one area. The important thing is if we got our food at the end of the month, then this grain will be taken to the grinding mill. Then we eat it, and then we are fine with it. But if there's no food, for example, like this grain or meat at the end of the month, then where are we going to get this grain?
Ret Kwajian is another IDP who left the UN camp about 5 months ago. Kwajian says he continues to receive WFP food rations. He says WFP should not cut food supplies to IDPs who have no source of income.
The decision is not going to be helping because the people who are staying in the POCs across the country are the people who are not able to supply, you know, for themselves, and they may need help from any institution. And I think the decision is going to be devastating because these people have nowhere to go. So there's need for WFP to revise their decision.
36-year-old Kouma Jopei, who is a former IDP, says he believes it is time for the IDPs to start a new life.
I can even support it because I can support myself. I can work hard when I'm hungry. So it will open a way for me alone without thinking of someone to help me, because helping always encourage laziness. So I even in IDC encourage people to work and work hard to get their daily food and all this.
Pei says as the WFP begins reducing IDP's food rations, the agency should provide some basic needs such as healthy care, temporary shelter and water for the IDPs. Earlier this week, the WFP country representative in South Sudan, Matthew Hollingworth, says the UN Food Agency will suspend food assistance for 106,000 displaced people across South Sudan in October. Hollingworth says IDPs in Wau, Juba, and Bor South will be affected. WFP says the decision was reached following what it calls a funding crunch. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
From Juba, we moved to Uganda, where the country is on high alert due to the confirmed outbreak of meningitis in the neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo. The government has embarked on surveillance among border communities to limit importation of the deadly bacterial disease. Uganda has several border points with South Sudan. For VOA News, Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
As one of the countries in the meningitis belt of sub-Saharan Africa, Uganda is watching carefully the status of a meningitis outbreak that was recently declared in DRC's northeastern Chopo province. Over 250 suspected cases and 120 deaths have been reported in the area, where people are constantly crossing the border for trade, visits of relatives, and people seeking refuge in Uganda. Uganda's Ministry of Health has deployed teams at all crossings to ensure that travelers are tested for the disease or bear vaccination certificates. Dr. Jane Ruth Acheng is Uganda's health minister.
Especially those who are very prone, the children, the fishing community, border communities. Many of you will recall that many of our hotspots areas for meningitis were vaccinated some time back. And right now what we are doing is carrying out adequate surveillance. If the DHO detects anything like meningitis, then we shall respond accordingly.
Speaking from the area, Acheng told VOA that the ministry has embarked on creating awareness among the local communities on how to avoid contracting the disease and the health threats across the region as the fight against COVID-19 continues.
Usually we get meningitis outbreaks during the dry season when it is so windy. We are now moving into a rainy season. The district health office will guide the population accordingly.
In 2017, Uganda carried out a mass vaccination against meningitis in 39 districts believed to be hotspots for the disease. The vaccination is also embedded in the routine inoculation of children aged below age 5. The health organization has warned that the recently detected type of bacterial meningitis in DRC has the potential to cause large epidemics, especially in countries in the meningitis belt, which includes 26 countries running from Senegal to Ethiopia. Over the years, it has been most vulnerable to the reoccurrence of meningitis globally. Meningitis is spread from person to person through droplets of respiratory secretions. Available research indicates that the disease presents a 5 to 10% fatality rate and typically kills within 24 to 48 hours after onset of symptoms. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, we look at how women leaders are making changes in Tanzania. That story is coming up right after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you are going to have a busy day, do you get up early?
I wake up the same time I wake up, no matter how busy I want to be. The only time I wake up earlier than expected is when I have production. Most of the times I'm into TV, radio productions, and sometimes you get the call time to be 5 or 4:30.
Psychologically, I do get nervous when I have like a big day ahead of me. So yeah, I have to get ready for that.
Yes, I do. But I do plan before the busy day. And then when I get up early, I make sure I implement the plan.
Yes, I get up early to prepare the day and make sure that I execute everything I'm supposed to do. In fact, it even starts from the previous day.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. September is a Suicide Prevention Awareness Month, and according to Kenya Ministry of Health, at least 483 people died of suicide in Kenya between March and June this year. As Maureen Ojiambo reports, the Kenyan Psychiatric Association says the numbers are likely to be much higher because the attempt to commit suicide is criminalized in Kenya.
According to the research, individuals committed suicide due to extreme poverty, lack of access to employment opportunities, and discrimination, as the youngest person to take their life was 9 years old and the oldest 76 years. Lillian Munya's sister committed suicide in 2019 while in school at the age of 17 years with what Lillian says was a mental health illness, a problem that her sister never shared.
My sister's death was a result of mental illness that she wrote on a note she left behind. The notes were written from the year 2015 to 2018. These notes were expressing her feelings towards my late mother, who died in the year 2015. She said in writing that she was hurt when our mother died. She wanted our late mother to see her join national school, but the mother did not say since she was dead, and that's what made her commit suicide. As a family, her actions really hurt us.
According to Section 226 of the Penal Code, an attempt to suicide in Kenya is a crime, which can lead to imprisonment of up to 1 year. The president of the Kenya Psychiatric Association, Dr. Chitai Murabula, said that the government should revoke the act that punishes suicidal actions.
Unfortunately, Kenya is a country where our culture strongly disapproves suicide. And this cultural leaning has found its way in our laws, and it has been part of our laws. So that our penal code, Section 226, makes it a criminal offense, specifically a misdemeanor for a person to attempt suicide. And so the Kenya Psychiatric Association has been urging the government, especially our parliament, to repeal Section 226 of the Penal Code so that a person who attempts suicide is not imprisoned.
Another Kenyan, Bevna Liaka, is a caregiver to a mental health patient. She says some patients give up on themselves and decide to commit suicide.
And even sometimes we try our best as caregivers and we give our all, and sometimes you wake up one day and yeah, it's happened. Your friend committed suicide and it's painful. And we've had, you feel like, I really thought we were making progress. And then you wake up and they're not there anymore.
Dr. Chitai says with the pandemic, many people are suffering from mental health illnesses, and that negative social factors have contributed to the spike in suicidal cases.
We must realize that Kenya is one of those countries that tend to have negative social factors that encourage suicide. So we are talking about things like unemployment, things like chronic illnesses, and unavailability of good healthcare facilities in the country. And we're also talking about high prevalence of mental illnesses and a high treatment gap, so that nearly 85% to almost 90% of Kenyans who have mental illnesses do not get the adequate treatment.
In a global statistics, WHO says that 703,000 people take their own lives annually. The WHO also noted that poor data, lack of awareness of suicide as a public health issue, and the taboo in many societies around openly discussing suicide are obstacles to fighting the problem. Reporting for VOA, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
High-level African officials met virtually this week to discuss the challenges Africa faces in trying to manage growing population amid climate change. The conference was aimed at identifying ways African governments can manage this pressure to minimize or avoid conflict. For VOA News, Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Africa generates about 3% of global greenhouse gas emissions, the lowest of any continent, but it is more vulnerable than any other region in the world, since Africans depend so heavily on their natural environment for food, water, and medicine. Speaking at a virtual conference Tuesday on climate, conflict and demographics in Africa, Nigerian Vice President Yemi Osinbajo said African governments need to keep the climate in mind as they try to boost their economies.
Our first obligation for us and for African countries must always be to ensure the well-being of our people through access to development services, including electricity, healthcare, education, safe jobs and a safe environment, including access to clean cooking fuels. We must prioritize solutions that align the development and climate agendas, and that is absolutely important.
The Center for Research on the Epidemiology of Disasters, based in Brussels, says that in 2019, Africa recorded 56 extreme weather events compared to 45 in the previous year. The extreme weather patterns affected the lives of 16.6 million people in 29 countries. At least 13 million of them were from five countries: Kenya, Mozambique, Somalia, Tanzania, and Zimbabwe. West Africa had fewer weather-related catastrophes, but is feeling the effects of global warming just the same. Kwaku Ifirie is the Ghana Environment Minister. He explains how climate change has impacted agricultural lands in the country.
The harsh and deteriorating climate conditions in northern Ghana undoubtedly energize the region, growing food insecurity and the seasonal north to south migration. And besides, the increasing occurrence of floods and protracted droughts leads to displacement of people. Statistics show that over the last few years, there's been a new internal displacement which has occurred in Ghana due to climate-induced disasters and even beyond our borders.
The UN Special Representative to the African Union, Hannah Teta, says the continent needs to improve cross-border information sharing and cooperation to handle climate-related crises.
The challenge has not been that we haven't yet developed these structures. The challenge has been that we have not utilized them yet effectively. And that goes to issues of national sovereignty, the unwillingness of member states to have others, as it were, take an active interest and maybe recommend things that need to be done in order to respond to particular crises. And if we recognize that we are all in this together, then that certainly has to change.
As for specific suggestions, Osinbajo suggested governments encourage greater use of natural gas and plant more trees to maintain forests that can soak up carbon dioxide and prevent it from warming the atmosphere. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
From Nairobi, we move to neighboring Tanzania, where the country's first female president, Samia Suluhu Hassan, this week named a woman as a defense minister, the latest in a number of appointments of women to top government positions. Gender activists have welcomed the move but say more needs to be done to reduce Tanzania's gender equality gap. For VOA News, Charles Kombe reports from Dar es Salaam.
The appointment came as part of the second cabinet reshuffle that President Samia Suluhu Hassan has made since the death of her predecessor, John Magufuli, earlier this year. At the inauguration of Tegumena Taxi as Tanzania's first female defense and national service minister, President Hassan said she made the choice to shatter the myth that women cannot serve in such a position.
Nimeamua kuvunja
She said, "I have decided to break the long-time myth that in the defense ministry, there shall be a man with muscles. The minister's job in that office is not to carry guns or artillery," President Hassan said. Her main duty, Hassan added, is to coordinate and manage the administration of policies at the ministry. Gender activists have welcomed the appointment, but said more needs to be done to address gender equality. Anna Henga heads the Legal and Human Rights Center.
Kwanza ni kubadilisha sheria
Henga says there must be an amendment of laws such as the Marriage Act and the Education Act, laws that put women in law decision positions. She added that the government should also allocate money through the health ministry to educate people that women can also be leaders. Analysts say an increase in the political representation of women at the national level does not automatically lead to women having more power in daily life, especially in highly stratified societies. Sociologist Nasoro Kitunda. Kitunda said, I think this tries to show that there is a direction in gender equality, though I'm not a believer in gender. The primary criteria, Kitunda added, should be someone's performance and their ability to implement those responsibilities. For Tanzanian human rights activist Aika Peter, appointing more women leaders is positive, but there must be a rotation to allow others to show their leadership skills.
We really need to see new faces when in his positions. You know, unapoona.
Peter said, we really need to see new faces in these positions. When you see the same people being recycled every day, it gives the impression there are people who are so good at this job, there are no others who can be good at it. The latest appointment of Defense Minister brings the number of women who hold ministerial positions in President Hassan's government to 8. Charles Kombe, for VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
That's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now leave you with some voices from Yei County in Central Equatoria State.
Asia murgotana dengar tak kena soso nak panakan nabunda yenan nakku wewe nak panakan nabunda aya yenan nakku nak panaka kanyaranina yenan nakku nak panakan namadana yenan nakku wewe nak panakan nasopuna yenan nakku adi nak panaka kakitanina we
We have been listening to that beautiful song from Yei County. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for allowing us into your homes, phones, and vehicles. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.